On that note, let's shift gears and go into the teaching. We've been doing a series on pretty good parenting, as opposed to perfect parenting, which I, you know, gave up on a long time ago. I remember reading a while back an interview with a counselor. If I remember correctly, it was Henry Cloud, who's a well-known Christian counselor, psychologist, and written, I think, 30 or 40 books. And he was asked what his advice was would be to young people, you know, as a parent or someone who cares about young people and as they get launched into life, what advice would you give them? He said, well, I'd really teach them or encourage them to understand how to fail. And the person said, why would you do that? You know, I want my kids to be a success. Why would you teach them about failure? He said, well, because they will fail at some point. They will. It's part of life. But how they handle that is going to have a huge impact on what happens after and how far they go, how well they do, their relationships, all that kind of stuff. But it got me thinking about, well, what are some of those things that are important for us to know if we're going to be successful, if we're going to have our kids be successful, if we're going to be the men and women that God intends us to be and have the life and have the impact and all that kind of thing. And so I've thought about that a lot over the years, and I've thought about it, you know, in terms of my kids. And obviously I want my kids to be successful. Now, I want to be careful right off the bat when I talk about that, and I say this, I think, every week because I think we really need to get a hold of it. By success, I'm not talking about having a big bank account or a powerful position in business or the world or politics. That's not really what I care about. What I care about is that they have a life that's marked by joy and by peace, by a sense of purpose, a life that's fulfilling and satisfying, a life that has an impact on the people around them, on whatever, you know, range that is. And I'm very aware that I can't guarantee that for them. You know, life is life, and that's I can't control that. I can't control the choices they make. Or any of those things, but what I can do as a parent, and what we've tried to do over the years, is stack the deck in their favor. Stack the deck so there's certain things that they learn about life, about and who they become, that position them so the odds are in their favor, okay? And that's what I want to talk about a little bit more this morning. You know, what are some of those things? I said, as we've gone through it, we've talked about effective discipline and having a vision for your kids. And today I want to cover what I call foundations for success. Now, as we go through this, you need to grab hold of this yourself because they are true whether you're 5, 15, 25, 35, 55. They're the same for all of us. So even if you don't have kids and aren't thinking in terms of that, this is true for you personally in your own life. Okay? Now, what I did was I went through the book of Proverbs. And Proverbs is written by Solomon, you know, the wisest man in the world. His reflections, his insights, written possibly to his children or to his sons, saying, you know, this is my observation from what I've experienced in life, what I see in the world around me. Here's the things. These are the qualities that will lead you up or lead you down, that will set you up for success or for failure in life, in business, in your relationships, with your finances, in your spiritual walk, in every area. And if you've read Proverbs, it's one of my favorite books, probably because there's all these little pithy one-verse statements, and it's bite-sized chunks, and I'm like, oh, I can get a hold of that. And I have read it probably every year for the last 30 years, and sometimes more than once a year. I think it's one of my favorite books, just because I think it's filled with wisdom. So I want to go through some of that. And what I did for this series was actually identified 6 themes. I went through and said, what are the themes in Proverbs? You know, the kind of things that come up over and over and over again. Maybe not all at once, but if you trace them, it's like, boy, he sure talks about this one a lot. You know, this one comes up over and over again. And there's 6 or 7 of those that are really key for having a good, satisfying life, the kind that God intends. So I want to go through those today. I actually identified 7. I'm going to go through 6 of them and one next week probably. These are principles, and like I said, I want you to listen on 2 levels. For yourself, and if you have kids, how do I impart these to my kids? And that's kids, whether they're 2, 5, 10, 15, 20. I think it looks different at different ages, but we still have that same privilege if you're a parent. Okay. Now, let me say this as well before I get into it. As I thought about this and went through it and looked over what I had written, I went, you know, as I recall when we were parents, our kids were younger, my goal was really survival. It wasn't so much imparting anything to my kids. It was just, how do I get through the day without killing myself or them or someone else? And if I do that, it was a good day. Okay, so I want to be careful because it's possible to go through a list like this and feel like you're getting laid all this stuff on you and you go out feeling like a total failure instead of, oh great, I've got a handle on something. So as we go through this, I want you to think about it this way. As a parent, you do the best you can. These are areas to pay attention to. None of them were we perfect at? Did we do every day or even every week? But my belief and my confidence is that over time, over months, even years, touching on different things in different ways over time, it adds up and has an impact. Doing the best you can, whatever that looks like, combined with the work of God, helps set people up for success, stacks the deck in their favor, okay? So I want to be careful that when you walk out, you grab hold and say, boy, I can do this, or here's some things I can do, and not go out, especially if you're a parent, feeling like a failure or crushed, or man, I could never do that. So you really need to ask God to help you with it, especially if you're one of those people who is just vulnerable to condemnation. You're a bit of a perfectionist, and if you don't get it perfect, then you failed. If that's your personality, then you really got to grab hold of what I just said. Okay. So I'm calling these the Success 7. I started with Success 6, and I was like, Success 6. I can't say that very fast very often. And the first one is simply putting God first. And I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about that more next week in depth. How do you raise kids who love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength? So we'll talk about that. How do you help your kids become vibrant, you know, people of faith and you know, that? But I'm going to put that next week. So that's the seven, that's one. So today we'll hit the Success 6. Success 6, Success 6, Success 6. There's got to be a way to say that better. Anyways, but Success 6 sounds a little bit like sex. So let's start with that one. It's amazing that a good chunk of Proverbs talks about sex. And sex is a pretty big deal in our world. That's my observation. I've heard that. I've heard that every time I've driven down the road and seen a billboard, turned on the TV, turned on the radio, or I walked down the hall or down the street. And chapters 5 through 7, there's like three chapters that the majority of them is talking about sex, talking about warning your son about adultery and not, you know, falling into that trap and all kinds of things like that. So what I want to suggest is one of the keys to having a satisfying life for you and that you need to impart to your kids is getting this area of sex right. And we tend to fall as Christians into the error of you know that sex is somehow dirty and I've been in places where the whole goal is just to make sure the kid says no until you're married and you almost impart this mindset that somehow sex is a bad thing. Or somehow dirty, or less than God's best, or whatever. And that really doesn't help you or your kids. Okay? Because especially when they're world surrounded by that, where they're getting the message that this is the best thing, and if you want to have a happy, satisfying life, you need to have sex, and lots of sex, and more sex, and good sex, and that's really the thing. Well, you're setting them up to fail. There's a couple things that we need to communicate about sex to our kids. I was actually going to ask someone to see, you know, count how many times I say sex in this sermon. So we'll see. It's going to be several. It's going to be a lot. First off, how do you teach your kids about sex? I want to make some suggestions, and this is specifically to parents. But one, start early. You know, when that three, four, or five-year-old comes and says, "How are babies made?" I had a friend who, I don't remember how old, but came and said, you know, where do babies come from? And he went into an explanation, explained the whole thing and about reproduction. And he goes, oh, Tommy said there was from Jewel. Okay, we're missing each other here. So, you know. No, not from Jewel. But the earlier you start talking honestly, the more natural it is. Your kids will pick up your attitude. If you're nervous and uptight about it, they're going to go, ooh, there's something here. They're going to pick up the vibe. So I'd encourage you to start talking honestly and early, actually using real words for body parts. I know that's a weird thing, you know. But don't wait for years and years until they're, you know, high school for the talk. You guys have, I had the talk with my dad, you know. The talk was, he handed me a pamphlet and said, why don't you read this and see, ask me if you have any questions. I don't know. Nope, no questions. I don't want to talk to you about this, but I want to read it, you know. Don't wait. Don't wait to have the talk. Start the talk at age 3, 4, 5. Just make it natural. Okay? Natural and honest. And then you don't have the weirdness that often comes with it. Okay? Don't be embarrassed about it. You know? Hopefully you can say to your kids if you have them, sex is a good thing. You know? You wouldn't be here without it. Okay? I know. It gets weird. It's very weird having your kids in the front row as you talk about this. But anyways. Secondly, be holistic. One of the lies of the world is that good sex depends on technique. I remember I had two buddies in college, and you know, we had a bet about who would get married first. Whoever got married first had to buy the other two a steak dinner. And then whoever got married second, we just kind of kept it going. I was last. That's what happens when you gotta go across the world to get your wife. It takes longer. So we're having dinner, and it's like, she finally said yes, I'm taking him out to dinner, and we're talking, and one of the guys says, yeah, man, that whole lie about technique, that's just so wrong. And I'm like, and I said, yeah, I'm sure it is. And so I'm going, I don't believe you. Because I was actually inundated with the world's ideas so much. And he said, you know what? It's all about communication, connection, intimacy, and that flows into sex in a whole different way. And it's really true. You know, the biblical picture of sex is not just a physical thing. There's a physical and emotional and spiritual component to it. If you don't understand that yourself or pass it on to your kids, you're setting yourself up for failure and frustration in that area of life. Okay? And in order to help your kids resist the temptations of the world, you need to be able to say to them, you know what, this isn't just a physical thing. If it's just physical, big deal. But actually, the emotional connection that's there, the trust that flourishes in a lifetime commitment, you know, the commitment of marriage, the trust that flows out of that, the depth of connection, that makes a huge difference. Spiritually, Paul said, you know, he warned Corinthians about, he said, you know, don't you know when you have sex with a prostitute, you become one with her? There's a spiritual dimension of connection when you have sex with someone that happens that the world does not understand, but is real. And you don't want your kids to have that kind of connection with lots and lots of different people. It's a great way to destroy your personhood. So you need to let them know, you know what, this is more than just that. It's more than just physical. There's an emotional and spiritual component to it. Okay? Point out, man, we had many conversations with our kids as they're growing up, pointing out people who would dress a certain way or attitudes on TV and different things. Say, hey, did you see that? You know, what do you think's going on there? Some girl would walk down the street in, short shorts and really tight halter, and would point her out and say, "What do you think guys think about that?" You know what? They don't go. I promise you, they don't go. Boy, I'd like to be married to her. That's not the thought process. Explain why and not just what. So you need to pass, and you need to make that a natural part of life. Okay? Doesn't have to be a course you sit down, but you need to engage and talk about that. I had a talk with each of my girls as they're growing up on their birthday, took them out for dinner, and we had what my friend calls the men are scum talk. You know what that talk is? That's where we talk about how guys actually think, how they really operate, some basic seduction strategies that you need to be aware of. Why? Because I'm very familiar with those on the guy side, and I really don't want my daughters to fall for that. I don't want them to fall for the, oh, you know, I love you. I'm trying so hard to restrain myself, but you are so, I love you so much, it's just hard. And the girl ends up going, oh, you know, I appreciate your sacrifice, and I just want to make that easier for you. And they're being completely manipulated into giving up something precious. Because they're so soft-hearted and they're, you know, so appreciative of the guy's sacrifice. Stupid. And we had the talk to say, and you know what? The fact that the guy is a Christian doesn't really change any of that. Sorry. Whoops. Yeah, you understand? God didn't rewire my brain about sex when I got saved. It just meant that now I know I'm not supposed to do certain things. But you know what? I'm still wired visually. I still have the same desires, the same drives. Fortunately, I've got the Holy Spirit. But you know what? He didn't suddenly shape my character where I had perfect self-control either. We need to recognize that and be honest about that. The fact that a guy is a Christian doesn't necessarily mean he's walking in purity or has good character or that you can trust him in this area. You need to find out. Let him show it. Let him prove it over time. Okay? So, if you want your kids to have a good life, if you want to have a good life, get that area right. Don't just adopt the world's view that, oh, this is just pleasure. It feels good. You know, what some parents would just say, well, it's not that big a deal. It doesn't feel good. Yes, it does. Don't lie. Just make sure you give them the whole picture, the emotional side and the spiritual side as well. Otherwise, you're cheating your kids. Second theme in Proverbs. I won't take this long on all of them, but I figure sex, at least I'll have your attention on it. Pursue righteousness. It's amazing if you go through Proverbs how often Solomon says, you know, righteousness is its own reward, but brings incredible blessings to you. Proverbs 11:3, it says something like, integrity will guide you. If you're a person of integrity, it actually will help you make decisions easier because automatically there will be a whole bunch of things that you say, well, I'm just not going to do those. They lack integrity. No, I'm not going to lie. No, I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to steal. I'm not going to do this, this, that. Boy, all those options are suddenly off the table. It makes decision-making easier. Your integrity will actually guide you. Part of pursuing righteousness, I think, is learning to be honest. And let me be clear, honest at every level. Most of us would agree that, you know, I need to teach my kids to tell the truth. I should tell the truth. But honesty at every level includes things like emotional honesty. We need to learn, each one of us as adults, how to be honest about what we feel, about our motives, our fears, the things underneath the surface that are affecting what we do. You know, honesty is more than facts. You can get the facts right and be lying through your teeth. Politicians do it all the time. You know, selectively pick out certain facts that support your position and leave out the rest, and you're telling the truth. Those are all true, but you're not really being honest. Help your kids learn how to be honest, even emotionally. Our kids, man, there were times that we would force them to talk about their feelings. We'd sit sometimes for hours. So how do you feel about that? I don't want to talk about it. Well, I understand that. Too bad. So tell me how you really feel. I hate you. Okay, let's talk about that. And get into it. And get into, well, if they said that, that's probably because somewhere down underneath it, they're hurting. Or they're upset. Or they feel treated unfairly or unjustly. And frankly, sometimes they were. We didn't always get it right. So pressing past the surface to say, you know what, let's draw that out. Tell me how you feel. And those would, you know, it was hard work and exhausting, but precious. As our kids learned how, at different, you know, different ways, different levels of time, to talk about what's going on inside. Honesty at every level is part of being righteous, part of being able to relate to other people in a healthy way, part of being able to understand other people. Okay? Teach them how to do that. It builds a foundation of trust. I'm going to go on from there. I actually had some more stuff. But the third one, Help them develop the proper view of money. See, Proverbs really, if you take out sex and money, you've lost half the book. You know, and Christians, we get really weird about money. You know, we read those things where Jesus said, blessed are the poor, and we think, okay, so money is bad. But we live in a world that says money's good, and we read some of the Old Testament promises that says, oh, God blessed him, and he had, you know, 1,000 of everything, and you know, all this, and we think, oh, so money's good, and then we have a health and wealth gospel that says, you know, if you really believe for this stuff, claim it, God has it for you, and we end up with, so, okay, it's good, and God will bless me with it, but I'm blessed more if I'm poor, and we get kind of weird. Well, Proverbs is really good because basically says avoid the extremes. One extreme is valuing money too much, which can lead to greed. That's really what I'm living for, or a spirit of poverty. And poverty is where you feel like you never have enough. It's not about how much you actually have, it's how you feel. You can live, you can be a wealthy man and live with a spirit of poverty, feeling, man, I just don't have enough. Howard Hughes was famously asked once, you know, how much money do you need? He said, just another million or two more. I go, okay, you know, I'd be content with, you know, just a few million. I don't need, you know, more after that. So greed or poverty. The other is over-spiritualizing where it doesn't matter. Just doesn't matter. Don't pay attention to it. God will provide. Now, our family has seen God provide so many ways, so many times, but the last thing I want my kids to do is cover irresponsibility with a false faith that says God will provide. Did you hear that? That's the other extreme. One is to make that your goal in life. The other is to ignore what Proverbs says and the whole scripture says about you need to earn it and work hard to get it. Okay? That's all part of the deal. Teach them about tithing, saving, and generosity. Tithing, giving your first 10% to the Lord. I can remember, you know, we've always tithed. Kids would get money from somewhere, and we say, so did you tithe? Did you give the Lord his share? Did you give it? Teach them about saving. You know what? Proverbs, which one do we put up there? 13:11. He who gathers money little by little makes it grow. That's a basic rule of life. You know, no, and we live in a lottery culture that says, you know, go for the quick fix. And you just, you know, get the big hit, and you win. But Proverbs says, you know what? Start young. Put your money away little by little, and over time, it will grow into a lot. Teach your kids that. Help them save. And give them opportunities to be generous. Now, the best way to teach your kids to be generous is what? Be generous. Give money away. Let them see you give it away. You know, give it to the homeless guy who you're at the stoplight, and he's walking up, and, you know, give him some. You know, we've given our kids lots of opportunities to give stuff away. You know, for example, we did a garage sale a few years ago, well, actually when they were little, and said, okay, what are you guys going to sell so we can raise money and give it away to missions or the poor or whatever it was at that time? You know, Mom and I are going to give away this and this and this and this. What are you going to give? What are you going to sell to make money? Oh, okay, I'm going to give this and this. And it's amazing. It's on the one hand, sometimes they'd get really excited about it. Oh, I'm going to give like all my toys away. And that's where you bring a little bit and say, well, maybe not all of them. You can keep one, you know, or something like that. You know, and other times, they'd actually almost feel, they couldn't necessarily put words on it, but would feel like God was pressing something. They'd be like, oh, I don't want to give this away. You don't have to. Well, I kind of do. But, you know, and it would almost create a little mini crisis. That's good. Those kind of crises is good, where they've got to wrestle with, oh, I want this, but I want to help little kids, and which do I do? And, you know, we gave them opportunities to give things away. We used to do for a couple of years, we participated in Project Angel Tree. If you're familiar with that, Prison Fellowship does this, where you can, at Christmas time, what you do is you can get names of families of whose, usually the husband is in jail, and the families will go without at Christmas. And so we would gather stuff up, we would get those names, and as a family go over and give them Christmas gifts, some of which we would buy, and some of which we would take our stuff. Except if you're going to do that, you can't take your junky stuff. That's kind of dishonoring and disrespectful. You take your good stuff. Okay. That's an opportunity to learn about generosity. It's been very satisfying, honestly, to watch our kids grow in that area. Scary at times, you know, because they can be more generous than I want them to be. But I figure, you know what, I'd rather err on that side. And they're learning about trusting God. Each of our kids now has their own stories about how they've gone after things and seen God provide. Tahila had one this summer. You know, she's looking at it and wants to go to this dance event in the summer. And she comes back, well, it's only going to cost, what, $4,000 or something. I'm like, well, that's great, babe. And inside I'm going, and you ain't getting it from us. All right, let's pray. And Shiloh is going to Mozambique, and it's even more than that, I think. And she's like, oh, I want to go to Mozambique with Mom. And we're like, oh, that's great. And I'm going, you ain't getting it from us. What a wonderful opportunity to pray and trust God. And since Tila Shiloh said, you know, she, you know, a combination of scholarship, and someone shows up and says, oh, you can stay at my house for free, and jobs show up, and money's given, and all of a sudden she's got enough money to go. I said, wow. That starts to build a heritage in the Lord. A foundation of faith when you let them go for things and don't provide everything for them. Let your kids earn some things. Let them have to put their faith out there and trust God to get some things. If it doesn't happen, don't rescue them. Say, okay, let's talk about that. Guess what? Disappointment is part of life. Sometimes it happens. How do you deal with it? Those are wonderful lessons to learn. Anyways, teach them about money. By the way, one of the key indicators, they've done studies on kids who have prospered later in life. You know what one of the primary qualities that they've spotted, that when kids have it, it serves them their whole life long? It's the ability to delay gratification. The ability to put off what they want for later. They actually had a study with marshmallows where kids would come in and you could have one marshmallow now, or if you wait an hour, you could get two. Over time, the ones who were able to delay gratification, you know, resist that marshmallow now because I'll get two later, did much better in life. Because often one of the things that undercuts us is we have to have it right now, and so we jump on it right now and we're unwilling to wait. Well, learning how to save for something is about delayed gratification. Money is a great area to teach your kids that. Okay. So, sex, righteousness, and money. I'm looking at my thing going, did I miss one here? Oh, no, my success six included got putting God first, so I'm only going to cover five today. So you should also teach your kids how to count. That's a very important quality that they have. It's overrated in some cases. The next one I want to talk about is what in the Bible is called the sluggard. Don't you love, I love the word sluggard. It's just so descriptive, you know, the sluggard. Scripture is full of verses about the sluggard, and none of them are positive, right? You know what a sluggard is? A sluggard is lazy. So I want to look at several of those, and because one of the things you need to do is teach your kids to avoid being a sluggard. So let's look at some of these. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer, ruler. It stores its provisions in summer, gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? I like the word. When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. What's it saying? So, you know, the ant works hard, it plans in advance, it works in advance, it's not waiting until the last minute. If you don't want to be poor, follow the example of the ant. Work hard and plan in advance what you're doing. Proverbs 15:19 is a great one. It talks about the way blocked with thorns. The way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. What does that mean? In other words, for the sluggard, they look at things and there's always obstacles. There's always problems. There's always reasons why I can't do that. I can't get down that path. There's too many things in the way. That's actually a sluggard's mentality of, oh, there's too many obstacles in the way, so I'm not going to try. It's too hard, basically. Well, you know what? I know an awful lot of adults who have that attitude. I've had it at times. Right? Oh, I'm not going to do that. That's going to take work. I mean, for me to do that, I'm going to have to work. I'd rather not do it. And of course, the problem is if you don't, then you don't get the reward either. Have you found anything in life that's really satisfying and worthwhile that didn't require work and effort? I mean, really? No, I will promise you, you haven't. And I would bet you, if you look back over your life, the things that you are most proud of personally are things that you actually had to work your tail off for, that you had to work hard for, whether it was something in the business world or sports world or in relationships. You had to work hard, and when you did, there was a satisfaction that comes with that that the sluggard never gets, because they always look and say, it's just too hard. And I promise you, growing up, at some point, your kids are going to say, it's just too hard. I can't do that. Proverbs 19:24, another sluggard example. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He'll not even bring it back to his mouth. Part of what I like these sluggard verses is they're not all, you gotta figure, what does that mean? Okay, he buries his hand in the dish. A sluggard never finishes what he starts. A sluggard will reach out and grab hold of something, but he never finishes it. A sluggard is great at starting new things, but never finishes the job, never finishes the work. You know how hungry you would be if that's the way you lived all the time? Oh, there's food. I think I'll reach out. Man, taking it all the way back to my mouth, that's just hard. That's just too... You understand, it's always easier to start something than finish something? Have you discovered that yet? Always. It's always easier in the front. The excitement, it's new, you've got energy. Then you get in, you start working for a while. It's like, oh, man, this is taking a long time. This is not as much fun as it used to be. This is taking for... Oh, man. It's a sluggard. And the end result of sluggard is poverty, by the way. I should give you two more on the sluggard. Proverbs 24. A sluggard doesn't plow in season, so at harvest time he looks but finds nothing. What do you think that means? Doesn't plow in season, at harvest time he looks and finds nothing. He's procrastinating. I'll do it later. I'll do it tomorrow. It's time to plow. Yeah, well, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it later. Because he plows, and then you plant the seeds, and then for a few months they come up, and if you don't do the work in the front end, you don't get the result in the back end. But how many people do you know? Because I know no one in here ever procrastinates, but you know people who do. Or I was like, oh, I should have done that. And now they either have to scramble last minute and go crazy because they didn't do it when they should have done it, or they just say, oh, I'm just not going to bother and don't do it all. That's a sluggard's mentality. Procrastinate. Put it off for later. One of the most, in studying CEOs and heads of businesses, one of the most common qualities, the things they have in common, is what's called a bias towards action. They have a bias towards getting things done. When something comes up, they, okay, let's do this now. I'm not going to do it tomorrow, next week, next year. Let's get this done now. They have a bias towards action, getting things done. Sluggards don't rise to be CEOs. Okay, those don't go together. Last one. Let's put the last one up there. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. A fierce lion roaming the streets. You know what we used to do? How we used to, some for a season, I was never able to make devotions work with my kids, you know, where you're supposed to sit down and gather the family and read the Bible story and there was a little Bible story. I could never do that. You know, I just could never make that work. Some of our best times are we'd hop in the car and I'm driving the kids to school and I would pull out some weird proverb like this and we'd spend the drive to school talking about it. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a woman who lacks discretion. What does that mean? The kid's like, what does that mean? Gold ring and a pig, you know, ooh, that looks, oh, that's crazy, you know, and what does that mean? There's a lion in the road. What? That's the sluggard saying. What does that mean? Any ideas? Making excuses. I can't do, there's a lion out there. I can't go to the store and get that stuff. There's a lion in the road. Really? Well, I want to raise lion killers. Go shoot that thing. And then get the milk. Right? I mean, That's a sluggard mentality. There's always a reason why I couldn't do it, why I won't do it, why I can't do it. I couldn't do it good enough. There's always an excuse. Right? Now, I was thinking, when I first read this and I didn't understand, I thought, well, that's a pretty good reason to stay inside. You know, there was no lion. Okay? There was no lion. But it's a really good excuse. Of course, if there is a lion, become a lion killer. Or at least a lion tamer. Right? Don't allow your kids, don't allow yourself to be someone who's always making an excuse. Oh, I didn't do this, I couldn't do that. You know what? That's the sluggard. And Proverbs says, you know, that person does not prosper. So teach him not to be a sluggard. Watch out for that. They start procrastinating, making excuses, and it's always too hard. You know, I want people who look and say, you know, that's hard. All right, let's go. Last one. The opposite of being a sluggard. If you go through, and here's what I would suggest. If you pull out your book of Proverbs, or pull out your Bible and open to the book, go through and highlight or underline, starting in chapter 1, every time you see the word diligence or discipline. You'll find it almost every chapter. And it's probably the number one quality that Proverbs talks about to be successful. Discipline or diligence. Diligence literally means getting up early to start work. Like getting on top of your stuff, not waiting, not procrastinating. It's the opposite of being a sluggard. Okay. Proverbs 9:13 says this, "The woman folly is loud, she's undisciplined and without knowledge." Folly, foolishness, goes with being undisciplined. Discipline means you can choose, you do what you should do when you need to do it. And you have the ability to make yourself do that. That's self-discipline. You can decide, I know what to do, I'm going to do what to do, what I need to do, when I need to do it. But foolishness is the opposite. You can't do that. Proverbs 10:4 says, "Diligent hands bring wealth." And 12:24 says, "Diligent hands will rule, will rise to positions of responsibility, will rise to positions of authority, because they're responsible." And Proverbs 13:18 says, "Ignore the person who ignores discipline will come to folly and shame, come to poverty and shame," in that version. Teach your kids to be disciplined, to be diligent, to work hard. How do you do that? How do you teach discipline? Have at least one thing that they've got to do all the time. At least start there. One thing that this is your job, you have to do it. There's no excuses, no procrastinating. This is, you got to do. Now, you know, when I look at this list, and you know, I got home last night, we were in Tennessee at a conference this week, so I didn't get the chance to talk about it with Nita. So but I'm looking at it going, man, I wish I had heard this when we had started. Because we did all of it, but none of it perfectly. And I want you to not expect to do it perfectly, but do it. Do it to the degree you can. And here's the key thing with this. As a parent, you'll always reproduce in your kids what you are, for better or worse. So if you want to impart this to your kids without just laying on them a bunch of rules and laws and things that, here, you do this and don't do this and just crush them under it, the best thing you can do is get those things in your own life, because they will see them in you, they will catch them from you, and you will naturally instruct them without having to have a list that you have to remember all the time. So whether you're a parent or not, if you want to have the kind of life God intends for you, the kind that the Proverbs, I think, is written to help you get, your number one priority is just say, man, let me get this in my life. Let me learn to not be a sluggard. Let me learn to embrace discipline and diligence. Let me get sex right. Let me figure out money and do it right and do it God's way. Because that's what you will pass on to your kids, even if you never sit down and give them a lesson on that topic. Because what's in you is going to come out. So get this stuff in you for your own sake and for their sake. Let's have the worship team come up. We're going to shift in. But, you know, I dream about the kids who are downstairs sometimes. You know, not literally dream. What? Jill, could you just stand up and share with everybody what you're trying to tell me as I come into my powerful conclusion of the sermon? Thank you. I forgot that during the announcements. So, be diligent. Do not procrastinate. Sign up for small group today. You know, otherwise you will be a sluggard and you will have to, you know. Pastoral manipulation is a wonderful thing, don't you think? Listen, let me close by saying this. I've said before, one of my desires is that our ceiling would be my kids' floor. That as far as we go in life, whether it's in you know, financially, spiritually, relationally, that would be their starting place and they would go beyond this. I think that's the desire of every parent, okay? You might feel like your ceiling is not very high. You know, it doesn't matter. Because the reality is, for each one of us, you're launching kids. And I dream about the kids downstairs. I watch them run around here sometime, and, you know, 3 and 4 year olds, and they're you know, spilling stuff, and they're running around. And I'm thinking, you know, someday that energy is going to be leading people to Christ and healing the sick and feeding the poor, and they're going to be moving into business and education and medicine and science and teaching different areas and start to affect the people around them, and they're going to affect the people around them, and that's going to be good news for their families and for their communities and for their churches and for ultimately for the world. And we get the privilege and responsibility of imparting the life of God and an understanding of God and His ways to them. So, you know, don't be lax about it. Because I think, you know, this generation right now across the world is having a bigger impact than my parents' generation did. There are more people coming to Christ. There are more people being healed. There are more hospitals being built, more poor people being fed. There's more happening. When these little ones who are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, get to be my age, that is going to be exponentially bigger. Because they're going to stand, be launched, they're going to start where we get to. Now, part of that means I'm not going to stop. I want to make this ceiling as high as I can. I want you to make that ceiling as high as you can. Be the best you can be for God. Learn God's ways. Go after it. Don't settle. Don't get to the point where you think, yeah, I think I'm done. This is good. I can coast. I can remember a couple years back, and I'll end with this. Jesh and I were arm wrestling. You know, and there comes a point in every young man's life where he wants to beat his dad. I remember that started about age 8. You know, come on, Dad. And he would go, okay, you know. And it took a long time. And I remember at one point I beat him. He said, I'm going to beat you someday. I said, I'm looking forward to it. But I'm not going to make it easy for you. I went and got out the weights, the dumbbells, and okay. I know he's going to beat me someday, Lord, but I'm not going to make it easy for him. What? Rain check. Yeah, okay. It'll come. But here's the thing. Parenting aside, you and I need to go after God with everything we have. Set the bar high. Not to in a competitive way, but because the higher we set the bar, the higher they start and get launched from. Let's launch them from 20 feet instead of 5 feet. Right? Makes sense, right? You jump higher if you start higher. Because their kids are going to build on that. So, that's also my transition into worship. Because we're going to go into worship now. And we're worshiping a God who says the same thing. All that heart that you might have for your kids or kids in general, God has for you. And worshiping God who says, man, I love you. I want good things for you. I've actually written it down so you can understand, have an idea of how to get there. I'm not just leaving you on your own. I'm with you. I'm for you. And so as we come into worship now, I want to encourage you just to come into God's presence and say, yeah, thank you, God.